Hey guys, what the heck is up? My microphone still not working. It's great. Actually, you know what? One second. We're getting the old microphone out because I'm done with this background noise. Also, you may have noticed that my sponsorships have stopped working. Yeah, I don't know why Anchor took away my sponsor because they said that it expired and they won't let me do a new one. So We're just vibing with not making money off of this podcast, but you can go over to my Crochet and Crime page, or Crochet and Crime podcast page on Instagram, and follow me there, and buy some of my creations from over there, and it'd really help me out, because I'm a broke college student who is doing a podcast to make money for the, or to make enough money for what my minimum wage job that I'm working over 40 hours a week at is lacking. I love living in 2021. It's really great. Okay, so I'm gonna go get my old microphone because the $50 one that I bought apparently doesn't want to work for me anymore, or just right now. I don't know. I have a Mac. Macs are kind of dumb, so it might be my computer. But yeah, let me go get the microphone real quick. See if I can find my dongle laying around because I need my dongle to work it to my connect it to my phone. Okay. Going to get my microphone, BRB. Okay, hey, can you tell the difference? Does it sound like old times? I made another cup of coffee It's 4:40 in the afternoon on Saturday. I made another cup of coffee because I am not doing well, folks. Just kidding, I'm doing fine. I'm just tired. You know, sometimes you just be tired. So, yes, I made another cup of coffee. Today I'm crocheting a little, like, desk chair pillow thing for my sister who is moving out tomorrow to go live in the dorms at her school that she is playing soccer at because she's she's a very good soccer player. Sports. Balls. So yeah, I'm crocheting that. I'm talking about the murder of Joanne Witt, which is also my mother-in-law's last name. I should not have said that. Why am I giving so much personal information? It's not necessary. Hey, Julissa. So, yes, I'm drinking coffee, way too much coffee at 4:40 p.m. I'm making dinner tonight, but I'm actually making breakfast, so it's not dinner at all. And we're talking about Joanne Witt, and there's really nothing else important to talk about. How's your summer going so far? We're getting into the hottest summer of the month. Hottest month of the summer. Let's correct that. Hottest month of the summer. And we're not doing well. I'm taking a sip of my coffee. One second. This morning I was on FaceTime with my mom, and I saw that one of my philodendrons, or pothos, I don't know, plants, has a new leaf, and I just repotted her, so hopefully she's thriving. I have two philodendrons, one named Phyllis, one named Phoebe. Phoebe slopes down, Phyllis is a very perky gal. And then I have three aloes, one named Nistric, because my friend Kirsten gave it to me. Nistric is Kirsten backwards. One named Newman, because I don't know, sounds funny. And then one named Nunu, because my stepmom gave it to me, and my stepmom goes by Nunu. And then I also have a little thing of grass that my stepmom gave me, and I just think he's funny. I haven't named him yet. Let's name him, a G. What's a G name? Not Gary, that's my friend's dad's name. I don't know. You guys come up with a name for me, okay? If it sounds like I'm breathing really heavy, I am. That's just it. I am. Let's grab a snack, grab a drink, and grab our projects and get into this. I'm drinking out of the grab a snack, grab a drink, grab your projects, and let's get into this mug. Go buy it. The link is in my bio on Instagram. Do some ASMR for you. Was that good? I could never do ASMR because I'm too hyper. Not too hyper, just too, unpredictable. And I make a lot of loud noises. Okay. Should we get into this? I don't know what's happening. Hold on, you're going to hear my computer sliding across my desk. Also, my phone is at 16%, so we have to do this quickly. Okay, one more sip. Hold on. No cuts in this podcast today. Okay. I'm sorry. We have to get serious. Someone's dying. Oh, I got these, like, under-the-bed organizers for my yarn because we rearranged our bedroom and, I don't know, we needed somewhere to put my yarn because I have way too much of it. And they're pretty nice. I like them, at least. Did I ever finish my story of what I need to do today? I have to go to Dylan's and get stuff because I'm making breakfast. What else am I doing? I don't know. My mom might come visit me next week, and I'm pretty excited about that. That's pretty cool. Okay. Joanne Witt was a 47-year-old single mother to her daughter, Tyler Witt, who was 14 at the time. The two were living in El Dorado Hills, California in 2009, and Tyler was the light of her mother's life as well as her grandparents' lives. And Tyler's father was never in the picture from the start. He was what do they call those? What do you call fathers that aren't in the picture? What's that called? There's a name for it, isn't there? Why am I going blank? What is that called? A bum? Not bum. What is that called? Why am I blanking on this? Oh, man. Okay, anyways, he was not around. And, you know, sometimes when fathers aren't in the picture or mothers aren't in the picture, the one parent that is has to be both the mother and father figure in one's life. And this is how it was for Joanne. Joanne was the mother and father figure in Tyler's life. And, you know, oftentimes that's a very extremely heavy weight to carry. It's very hard. I wouldn't know. I don't have children. But when Tyler was 5, daycare workers saw a red handprint on Tyler's cheek as if she had been hit with quite a bit of force. And since they are daycare workers, they are also mandated reporters. So they contacted CPS, and Tyler was removed from Joanne's care for about a month until Norb and Judy, Joanne's parents, received custody of her. Also, just have to say, I love the name Norb. I love it. It's like noob, Norb, noob, Norb. Tyler ended up staying with Norb and Judy for roughly half a year, and while Joanne took parenting classes, while Joanne was taking parenting classes on how to control her anger, Tyler was staying with Norb and Judy. And the handprint ended up being from an incident where Tyler was screaming in her car seat while Joanne was driving on the highway, and she was too stressed out. She was driving, and it was a busy road, and Tyler wouldn't stop screaming. So she turned around and she slapped her in the face. I'm sure my mother has done that to me before too. I'm not saying hitting your children's okay. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that things happen. Don't abuse your kids though. I already lost my spot and we're not even 10 minutes in. Oh, after 6 months, Joanne received custody again and Tyler was back in her home, but things were different. Losing custody of your child, especially at such a young age, can really affect the bond that a parent and child have. And Tyler and Joanne never shared the true mother-daughter bond that they had before. Again. Joanne was also terrified to even discipline Tyler anymore for fear that she would be turned into CPS again. So no discipline in a child also means bad behavior, so Tyler began acting out, knowing that she wouldn't be punished for this behavior. Excuse me. Sorry. Burps. I had a follower message me. And she was like, I love your podcast. Like, I just started listening. And she was like, I have to try Quirks because you always talk about them so highly. And I was like, oh my God. She definitely listened to the episode of me drinking a Quirk and then belching into the microphone. I'm so sorry. Hold on. I'm taking another sip of coffee. Like, I have indigestion so bad. And that's her first impression of me. She's like, wow, she loves Quirks. Oh my God, she's belching in my ear. Okay, anyways. Tyler would tell Joanne that she was going out on school nights at like 12 years old. She would just be like, yo, I'm leaving. You can't tell me no. And Joanne was just too afraid to tell her no. She would also get into trouble at school almost every single day. She would routinely run away from home. And she even started dating older boys. Yeah. Remember, she's 14, okay? So this is when she met Stephen Culver, a 19-year-old college student who she met in a coffee shop one day. Keep in mind, she was just going into ninth grade. Ninth grade! And he was in college! Oh, no. It's not good. Tyler was very, very controlled by Steven. Not controlled, but, like, influenced. I mean, obviously, he's 19. She's 14. To her, he's a god. Any older boy in your life at that age is a god. Your hormones are just, wow! Unless you're a lesbian, then that's cool too. I don't know why I had to say that. Steven introduced Tyler to weed, ecstasy, cocaine, and alcohol. And the effect that these things have on a developing brain is terrifying. Trust me, I know. I'm psychology. And just weeks after meeting Steven, Tyler told her mother that Steven would be renting a room in their home. Yeah, Tyler told her mother that her 19-year-old boyfriend would be staying in their home. But she left out a very important detail. That they were dating. Tyler told her mother and grandparents that Steven was like her big brother, helping her through life. They were just really, really great friends, that's all. And she even told him that he was gay to avoid any suspicion at all. I think we've all told our parents that at one point. Oh yeah, they're gay. Don't worry. It's not like that. Babe, it is. Joanne was weary at first because she didn't know this boy. Man, 19-year-old. But after a while, she came around to the idea and realized that maybe, you know, he did seem to be helping Tyler. He was making her happier. He was helping her with her schoolwork. Maybe it was a good thing. Joanne also realized that whatever he would be paying to her to rent out the room would also help pay off the house in the end, so she decided, you know what, heck it all. Let's let Stephen move in, despite everyone around her telling her that it was a bad idea. In April of 2009, Stephen Culver moved into the Witt home, and not even a month later, Joanne became suspicious of the status of her daughter and Stephen's relationship. One day, Joanne returned home from work a bit earlier than she normally did, and she heard both Tyler and Steven in Steven's room. Since she was already suspicious, she walked over to the door of his room and opened it, seeing that her intuition wasn't incorrect. It was indeed spot on. Tyler was in the closet naked, butt naked, naked, and hiding because she and Steven were about to do the nasty. I am 23. I cannot say the S word. Joanne immediately wanted Steven kicked out, rightfully so, and she called up two of her male coworkers to help her do it. The coworkers moved all of Steven's belongings onto the sidewalk, and then one of the coworkers named Vinny, which is amazing. What a great name. He sat Steven down and he had a conversation with him. He explained to him that he could and should, in fact, be going to jail tonight because Tyler was a minor, and that he was 5 years older than her. And then Joanne informed both Tyler and Steven that if they were ever seen together again, she would call the police and tell them that was, like, you know, what was happening. There was some statutory R going on. And then Vinny. We gotta love Vinny, okay? We're a Vinny fan club here. Vinny told Steven that if he ever heard of them being together again, he was going to hurt Steven East Coast style, not West Coast style. I have no idea what that means, but it's amazing, and I had to add it. Vinny was basically just trying to intimidate him, I think, but Steven could not care less. He was like, bro, I'm 19, you could shoot me, and the bullet would ricochet, okay? Got it. Taking another drink. I'm sorry if you heard me swallow, that's disgusting. Oh, there's my shoulder popping. I genuinely want to know if I can do this whole podcast without cutting it, besides the microphone cut in the beginning. Also, my shoulder just popped. My shoulders pop out of place all the time. I was a cheerleader for, like, how many years? I don't know. More than 9. And my bones and joints are completely, they're just bad. It's bad. All of my ball and socket joints, the cartilage is just, like, rubbed clean out of them. My knees, my hips, my shoulders, bad. But one time I was in Matthew's mom's kitchen with her, and I was doing something, I think we were helping her move, or we were cooking something, I don't know. it was like a very close proximity situation, and one of my shoulders cracked like it always does. It just happens when I like move it. I don't know. You probably hear it in my podcast pretty often. And she was like, "Oh my God." And I was like, "Yeah, it's just chill. It's my shoulder popping out of place." She was like, that should not be happening. It's not a thing that should be happening. And I was like, "No, it's fine. It happens all the time." And the fact that it just happens so often to me and I don't even realize that it's an issue is, it's probably an issue. Wait, I probably can do my hip real quick. Listen. Oh, hold on now. It's not going to work because I want it to. I don't know. There'll be times that I'll sit down on the ground at work with the kids and my hip will crack and my coworkers are like, "Oh my God." I'm like, "Yep. That's fine." Why was I talking about that? I don't know. I'm so sorry for the constant sipping. I'm just very tired. Tyler and Steven continued their relationship as normal after this incident. Like, in the month after being kicked out of the Witt home, he was there at least 20 times. That's a good 2/3 out of the month, mind you. Mind you. Mind. I'm getting my B's and D's mixed up even speaking. Now, these visits were obviously when Joanne was at work and the two were supposed to be at school, or when she was asleep and she wasn't awake to notice that he was there. Am I okay? I'm not. Joanne somehow figured out what was going on again and called the police like she said she would. And then Steven received a phone call from the police asking him if he had ever had sex with Tyler. I just said the S word. And it burped. To which he obviously said no, because he would be arrested on the spot. And then they asked him what his relationship to Tyler was, to which he said, "She's like a sister to me. I understand she's 14. I understand all of this. I'm just very, very scared at the moment. She's like a sister to me, but we have sex." This is not Alabama. It's California. So after this, things just got increasingly worse as the days went on. One day, Joanne came across Tyler's diary, and I just want to talk. Why do people always put things in their diary? Like, people can't just go and read them. People will be like, "Yeah, I murdered her." But then in court, be like, "I did not do that. That was not me. I did not write that." But don't keep a diary. Unless you're a serial killer, because then we can help. It'll help us solve your murder. I don't know. It's very dumb. I should write a course on how to be a serial killer. Tyler wrote about several times that she and Steven had sex, like the different positions they used and the different places they were, different dates that it happened on. So they were caught, obviously. Joanne took the diary to the police station and told Tyler that she had done so, which made Tyler lose her mind. And she and Steven both knew that he would go to prison for a very long time. So they were both scared of what was going to happen to them both. How many times did I just say both? 4? So let's go to June 2019. No, that's not right. Let's go to June 2009. That's better. Norb and Judy received a phone call from Joanne's boss, wondering if they had heard from her recently and knew why she hadn't been at work. We both know where this is going, so prepare yourself. Norb and Judy had just gotten back to California after being on vacation, so they hadn't seen or spoken to Joanne in a while. And Joanne's boss told her parents that she hadn't shown up for work for 2 days, a Friday, and then she had the 2 days for the weekend off, and then she hadn't showed up that Monday either. So that was something that was really out of character for her, and they were really concerned about it. And her parents assured her boss that they would get over to her house immediately and check on her. But then her boss was like, "Yo, I already have the sheriff on the way. Like, this is an actual issue, because this is very out of character for her." And when Joanne's boss had contacted the police for her absence, the boss had also informed police that Joanne had confided in them about some really scary behavior coming from Tyler and how they were concerned about the fact that she hadn't been at work for 2 days. I'm saying they because I don't know who Joanne's boss is. It's not that it's not public information, but it's also just not like a very important part of the story besides the fact that they called and whatever. Sorry if that's confusing. They, them. So Norb and Judy raced over to Joanne's home where some police and the sheriff were already waiting, and Norb got up to the front door and was like, "Yo, I can unlock it. I have a key." And he wanted to just go in immediately and be like, "Yo, Joanne, why are you not at work?" But the police wouldn't let him enter before they searched it thoroughly, which, being a true crime listener, you know, why. If I were her parents in this situation, I would freak out because the second police wouldn't let me enter before they searched. You know, usually they have enough, if they have enough suspicion that they're going to find something in there, they do find something. So, yeah. And they did. Sadly, they found Joanne Witt's body in her bedroom upstairs. It's important detail for later, not just a random one. They told her parents that her body was found upstairs deceased. They never said how, not murdered, just deceased. But when the CSI van pulled into the driveway and multiple detectives came onto the scene, oh my god, I just got semen! Ah! Anyways, when the CSI van pulled into the driveway and multiple detectives came onto the scene, Norb and Judy knew something bigger was afoot. Afoot. I'm sorry, I'm just in a silly, goofy mood. I don't know what's happening. I think maybe I'm manic? Question mark? Am I okay? No. Joanne had been murdered brutally. I cannot just take a sip of coffee and be like, Joanne had been murdered brutally. But she was. And she had been stabbed over 20 times. She had 20 stab wounds all over her body. One, including one that was in her neck that had nearly decapitated her. And in the midst of all the commotion, people realized that Tyler was nowhere to be found. Everyone's first idea is that someone came in and stabbed Joanne and then kidnapped Tyler, or that this was some kind of, like, burglary gone wrong. Kind of like the James Kloss one from last week. But, when they realized that, wow, I just lost my spot again. Yeah, they thought it was some kind of burglary gone wrong, but it wasn't long before people realized that Tyler was not the victim in this case. And a week before this incident, CPS was once again contacted in regards to Tyler and Stephen's illegal relationship, and they were currently looking into it when Joanne's body was found. So, when they realized that Joanne was dead, and Tyler and Stephen were both gone, along with the CPS investigation, they knew something deeper was probably going on. Sorry for the burp. And when Tyler and Stephen found out that Joanne had called in about the relationship, and that Stephen could go to a prison for a really long time, they thought that their only way out was to murder Joanne. I don't know. Your brain can't think right on copious amounts of drugs, dude. That's, yeah. So, on June 12th, 2009, Joanne went to bed like any other night, and at some point, Stephen was let into the house by Tyler, Gypsy Rose Blanchard style, and Joanne was stabbed to death. And this is somewhat morbid, but I think it's a thing that I need to add in, because when I read it, I was like, whoa. In Joanne's nightstand, just inches away from her deceased body, was a book called Parenting Your Out of Control Teenager. Yeah. So after the murder, Stephen and Tyler covered Joanne up with a blanket and cranked the AC all the way down, or up, down, to help keep the body from decomposing as quickly as it would normally. And then they locked up the house and left. Except they didn't flee the state, or even the city, for that matter. They went and hung out with their friends, kissing and holding hands in public, thinking that they were free and invincible. Obviously, this wasn't found out until, like, after the fact, but the two claimed that they had killed Joanne so that they could go and kill themselves together. So they went to San Francisco and got a hotel room, where they ate a cocktail of fruit, cake, and rat poisoning. Yeah. But it didn't work, and they probably just had wicked stomach pains and went about their day. Then 2 days later, a police officer found both of them changing their clothes behind a dumpster at the mall. I don't know. Teenagers, dude. So they were arrested on the spot for the murder of Joanne Witt and brought in for questioning. And obviously Tyler pretended to not even know that her mother was dead, just like Gypsy, and put on the waterworks show for the interrogation room. But they saw right through it, thankfully. And when Tyler and Stephen had planned to kill themselves, they had also written suicide notes. So in these notes, they had apparently alluded to the fact that they were the killers, though the letters have never been released to the public, as far as I'm aware. So we don't get to know what they wrote. I think that they should be released, but what do I know? Plus, Steven thought it would be cool to tell his friends that he was the one who'd murdered Joanne and showed them the bloody knife that he did it with, which was placed in the trunk of his car. So that is a lot. Steven even told prosecutors that he was the one who murdered Joanne while Tyler just watched him do it. This also comes to play later. Just keep listening. Steven's defense attorney claimed that he only said and did the things that he did to protect Tyler, the one who was actually the murderer. And a lot of people think this is true because the way he truly cared about Tyler. All the gross age stuff aside, Steven was constantly asking about her, even in his own interrogation. He was asking how she was doing and if she was okay. So he did truly care about her, even though he was sick and twisted. And when his mother asked him why he would say something like that, like why he would say that he did it, he told her that he was just in the mindset of protecting Tyler. I don't know. Steven's defense argued that while he had a clean record with no previous signs of violence, Tyler's record was concerning. And it was. Tyler would write in her diary that she prayed to God her mother would get into a car accident and die. You can find those pictures on Google. She would tell her friends that her mother drove her insane and that she hated her so much. And she even told a friend that if her mother didn't let her see Steven, she would kill her. So, like I said before, Joanne was always so scared to discipline Tyler in fear that she would be taken away from her again. But in the weeks leading up to her murder, she actually started laying down the law quite a bit more than she ever had before. And Joanne told some of her friends that Tyler was arguing with her quite a bit more since she was becoming more strict, and that some of these arguments have even led to physical fights. So CPS was called several times, and Tyler would always tell them that she was being abused by her alcoholic mother. Okay. Authorities even brushed off those claims because they never found evidence of Joanne being an alcoholic or even being a violent person when she was occasionally drunk. And a little less than a month before the murder, Joanne and Tyler got into a huge argument over Steven and Tyler's relationship, and it resulted in Tyler throwing things at her mother. This occurred on the day that Tyler learned that Joanne had reported their relationship to the authorities. So Tyler ended up calling the police that night, pretending to be her mother, saying, "My daughter Tyler Witt is physically assaulting me and she's vandalizing my home," to which the dispatcher asked if she felt safe staying on the phone, and Tyler said no. And then Tyler said that, Tyler said, pretending to be her mother still, she will not go into her room. I tried to push her into her room and we started to get in a fight and I'm bleeding. But then Joanne got onto the line and explained that the voice the dispatcher heard was actually Tyler, the daughter of the confrontation. And then Tyler could be heard in the background yelling, "Go ahead, finish the report, send me to jail." And honestly, she sounds like Danielle Bregoli from that episode of Dr. Phil. She just does, okay? But Tyler told prosecutors that she called 911 and lied because she wanted to be in jail more than she wanted to be at home. So she was taken to juvie for a few hours, but then she was returned back home because Joanne refused to press charges against her daughter. So, in Stephen's case, the odds do look like Tyler would have most likely been the killer over him. Norb and Judy don't know what to believe because they don't want to believe that their own granddaughter would kill their daughter, but they do know that Tyler definitely had something to do with it. And Steven's mom swears up and down that he could never do something like this because he's a great boy. She instilled such a great moral compass in him. You know, the normal slightly Oedipus complex kind of thing. But Steven's attorney claims that while Steven is suicidal, he isn't homicidal because his plan was to commit suicide over going to... Also, we don't say commit suicide anymore. His plan was to kill himself over going to prison for his relationship. I personally don't see how that makes him not homicidal, but I don't know. His attorneys also pushed that the theory that Tyler killed Joanne before Steven had even showed up to the house that night. So they're saying that, like, Joanne was already dead before Steven even got there. They claim that he had just come to the house to pick her up, hang out for a few days, and then they would kill themselves together, and that he had no idea that she killed her mom. They said that he got to the house, Tyler opened the door, Steven saw her standing there with a bloody knife, but there was never blood found in any other area of the house than the bedroom. Like I said before, her bedroom was upstairs. She had to go downstairs, walk to the front door. There was no blood anywhere but in the bedroom. I'm not sure because I've never stabbed anyone personally, but I think that if she walked to the front door after stabbing someone 20 times, there would at least be some kind of blood trail. Am I right? Am I correct? Yeah. So far, Steven's story is being proven false, left and right, and Tyler was still denying that she had any other part in the murder of her mom. And after a while, though, she cracked and admitted to helping with the planning of her murder, but maintained the story that Steven was the one who stabbed Joanne, not her. Coffee break while I let my upstairs neighbors be a little noisy. The other day, they were, like, rearranging or something at, like, 6 a.m., and it was very loud. It was very, very loud. Yeah. Tyler received a plea deal if she... Oh. Every time I talk, they start moving. If she testified against Steven, saying he was the one who did everything, she could get by with only receiving a second-degree murder charge. And you may think this is a scapegoat plan, and it kind of was, but because there was no witnesses to the crime, they only had two options. My phone stopped recording, so I didn't get to do it all in one go like I wanted to. It's okay. So yeah, they only had two options. They could either pin it all in one, or somehow get them both to confess. Well, I can't say that there were no witnesses, because there was one witness, but she didn't... Oh my god. I just choked my spit. Sorry. There was one witness, but she didn't come forward immediately when the situation I'm about to tell you about happened, so her claims were not admissible in court, even though they probably should have been. But she claimed that one day she was walking her younger child to the park in the neighborhood, and when she got there, she saw a teenager swinging alone, looking at the ground, and she said that the teen seemed very angry at the world and sad, so she approached her and spoke with her. Excuse me. And then she said that the teen told her that her mother was violent and abusive, and they argued often. And when the lady asked the teen what she was going to do about it the next time something like this happened, the teen said that the next time this happens, it's either going to be her or it's going to be me. Excuse me, hiccup. There's going to be another one soon. There it is. It wasn't until after the trial that the lady realized that she had been talking to Tyler Witt. Yeah. So a few months after the lady met the teen, she heard of the murder in her neighborhood and knew that the mother and a teenage daughter lived there, so she walked up to the police and asked if a mother had been murdered by her daughter, to which she was told it was an ongoing investigation and they couldn't share details at the moment. So, take that how you want to. I don't even know if I really believe it all, to be honest with you. The lady seems kind of wacky in her interviews, but if she's telling the truth, then shame on me, I guess, because that's some bold information. So, in 2011, Steven's trial began, and Tyler was brought in to give her version of events from that night. She claimed that they had planned for him to come over as soon as Joanne went to bed, and she said that she let Steven into the house, and he came in with his own chef's knife. And he went upstairs, killed Joanne, and then we know the rest from there. But prosecutors believed that her story fell nicely into the events that they had already had and knew were fact, so they could believe her, basically. Like, her story lined up, basically, is what they're saying. And she also passed a lie detector test, but I'm like, if those don't work to prove people guilty, they also shouldn't work to prove people innocent, you know? They always... I don't know. Tyler was declared sociopathic, so anything that she said wasn't credible in court. I don't know. She also said that she couldn't remember whose idea it was to kill Joanne, hers or Steven's. How do you not remember? How do you not remember? How do you not remember? Tyler claimed that she had two super beings living inside of her, an angel named Alex and a demon named Toby. And Toby was the one who took over her in situations where she felt threatened, and that was the one who was out the night that Joanne got murdered. Kind of sounds like she probably just watched a little bit too much of Paranormal Activity. What is that, two, three? I don't know. Which one has Toby? On top of Tyler's series of events, there was actual DNA evidence that attached Steven to the murder. Oftentimes, victims will have DNA under their fingernails, especially if they try to fight off their attacker by, like, scratching them and stuff. Well, Joanne had DNA under her fingernails, and when it was examined, it was found to be that of a male. Also, it was not linked back to Steven directly, but it was used against him in court because it was a male's DNA. She could have had a lover. Okay, she could have had a lover. They didn't know if it was Stevens or not, but it was a male's, I guess. What if Joanne was getting some booty on the side, you know? So Stevens' trial lasted a month, but it took the jury around 3 hours to come back and say that Stephen was guilty in the murder of Joanne Witt. And Stephen was given life in prison without the possibility of parole. And since Tyler took the plea deal, she was given a reduced sentence of second-degree murder and given 15 to life. And she will be eligible for parole in 3 years at 29 years old. And that's all. That's the case. What do you think? Do you think it was Tyler or Stephen? Or both? I think it was Tyler. I do. I think it was Tyler. But I think that Stephen was there. And maybe he got a few stabs in. But I don't know. I think that it was mostly Tyler. I think that Tyler planned it and was like, yo, Stephen, meet me here at my house. I'm gonna kill my mom. It's not joking. I just deal with things in a humorous way. But yeah, I definitely think it was Tyler that planned it and stabbed her mom. And I think that Stephen was just there because he loved her so much, or he thought he loved her so much, and he would do anything for her. Okay, hope you have a great day. Sorry, this was such a bummer. There's really no happy ending. If you're a mother and you think the world of your son and think that he could never do any wrong, I need you to check yourself before you wreck yourself. Because there's some weird kind of thing going on with mothers and sons sometimes, you know? Like, oh, my son couldn't stab anybody. He's so good. No, babe, you're just in love with him, okay? My chair is so creaky. Anyways, I hope you have a great day. Yeah, go check out my TikTok and Instagram, even though I've abandoned my TikTok. I promise I'll do something on it soon, okay? Give me a break. I'm working 40 hours a week, people. School's starting soon, though, so I should be working less, and I'll have more time. That sounds funny. Yeah, I'll be at school full-time, but I'll have more time. I will. I really will. What else? I don't really think there's much. COVID's coming back. Very rampant. Rampant? I don't know. It's coming back full swing. Do your part. If you don't want to get vaccinated, just wear your mask. Or just don't go out. But getting vaccinated would be pretty rad. I'm fully vaccinated. I'll say it. I don't care. I don't think it's a political thing, and if that makes you sad, I'm so sorry. I don't think that it's chemical warfare. I think that it's a pandemic. I don't know. I have many friends and family members in the medical field that are dealing with a lot right now because people don't believe that it's real. I've lost a lot of people in my life to COVID. I know it's very real. So yeah, do your part, wear your mask. Be nice to people, get vaccinated if you want to, if you can. Stay healthy, keep other people healthy. I like my lungs. You should too. You should like your lungs. You should like my lungs, and I like your lungs. Just like lungs. We like to breathe, okay? What else is there? Is there anything crazy coming up? Oh, yes, before I forget. Okay, so my mom's sister has a business called Made with Love. She's on Facebook and Instagram, and she just started a TikTok. So go give her some love. It's made as in, her last name's May, so it's M-A-Y-D, like made with love. She made me some of these, I put them on my Instagram, but they're those air fresheners that are like jelly beads that smell really good. I don't know. She made me some. I can't do fruity scents or like super strong, intense smells, so she made me 4 real chill smells. I got lavender, I got lemongrass and sage, I got magnolia and orange blossom, and then I got eucalyptus and spearmint. And they smell really good. And I like them a lot. And you should go get some. Okay, I think I'm done rambling. I think that's enough. I think we've been here long enough, okay? I'm gonna finish this coffee, then go to the store, and then cook Matthew dinner. Okay. Stay safe. Lock your doors. Don't talk to creepy men. Got it?